You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
My third-born son, he's my first-born son, but my third-born child. She's like, Kendra's like, what? Not familiar with that one. But my third-born child, my son, my first-born son, Jack, when he was born, we found that he was rashing up. His face got really, really rashy and to the point where it would be so bad it would be bleeding. And of course, people looked at us as wonderful parents, like, why in the world would you allow your son to have dry skin that bad? And we tried all the different treatments and topical things, and we tried to figure out, like, what is up with his face that it is so dry? And his body was like this too, but specifically his face, and his cheeks would get bright red, and we eventually, as the course of things are with insurance and all that, you know, we took forever to actually get to the root of the problem because we couldn't go there directly. But eventually we made our way to an allergist. And it turns out that Jack, our son, was allergic to peanut butter. A lot of people are allergic to that. Milk and eggs. So that was a bit of a doozy when it came to our diet. That kind of changed things a lot, and we learned some really nasty things. We learned some really nasty things that you can do to, instead of using milk and eggs. We also learned that if you don't have eggs, right, you can use bananas in pancakes in place of eggs. And that's really tasty. So that was one plus. But for the most part, you know, here we are. Kendra was nursing. She had to stop doing that because our son was allergic to milk, eggs, and peanuts. Pretty much everything. I mean, when you think about what you eat, most of your meals include that. And that was causing this to rash up. And they said, you know, maybe it would go away when he got older. But they weren't sure. Maybe it would get worse. So we had to be really careful what we did and how we treated him. And they gave us one of these. It is an EpiPen, because there's the potential that if Jack got some sort of thing he's allergic to, such as milk, eggs, or peanut butter, it could cause what is called anaphylaxis, an anaphylactic reaction, which basically you swell up, and you swell up so much that your lungs and your throat swells shut, and you can't breathe. And obviously, without breathing, we don't do so hot. So they gave us this EpiPen, and it comes in this nice little fancy pack. It has a belt clip that we could put on if we wanted to wear it on our belt. It's got a hook on it. And inside of it is a pen with the instructions on how to use it. And basically what this is it's an emergency thing that in the event that he has this sudden reaction, it is so sudden and so violent that you can't even get to a hospital or to a doctor in time to treat it. Essentially, he would asphyxiate, he would suffocate before you had a chance to treat it. And maybe you guys are familiar with this if you know somebody that's allergic to bees. They often carry these around because it's the same thing. It's such a violent, sudden reaction that you need to carry this. And what it does is it has a drug called epinephrine, which is a steroid that suddenly allows all of your muscles, and I don't know all the details, so if you're like a smart person, don't tell me. But basically it allows those muscles to relax temporarily to give you enough time to get to a hospital or to a doctor or whatever to be treated for it. And so that's the idea. And it comes in this thing. It's a needle, and it's inside of this, a needle that injects it into you. And it comes in a very safe little case, so you don't accidentally inject yourself. And then it has the needle is in this end here, and there's a safety cap. You take off the safety cap, and they say it's very important that you get to a doctor right away because the EpiPen won't actually, you know, it won't save you for good. It'll just give you a temporary thing. It'll give you what you need to not die. And so you take off the safety cap, and then they say what you do is you take it, and you stick it in your leg. But this happens to be a trainer. It's not a real EpiPen. It is a tester that they gave us to get used to the habit. And, you know, and if, man, the idea of saying, hey, mom, dad, I want you to take your one-year-old and stick him in the leg with a needle. So obviously they're smart. They gave you something to train with because, you know, that is not going to be my gut reaction, okay? So they gave you this trainer, and everything about it is exactly the same as a regular EpiPen. Everything on the outside, it's got the same case, the packaging, it goes in a little container, so that you can practice doing the real thing, except that, and even on the outside, it even clicks, I have to reset it here. There, you reset it. It even clicks like a real EpiPen would work. Except that everything on the outside looks good, but on the inside it's empty. There is nothing in this that will save my son or any of you in the event of an anaphylactic reaction. It won't do it. It looks good on the outside, but inside it is empty. A lot of us, and I say us, live EpiPen trainer kind of lives. Because we spend our lives investing and putting our time and effort and energy into things that on the outside look good. They look like they're going to save us. They're going to get us what we want. But on the inside, they are empty, meaningless. There's nothing in them that will save us. And this starting today and over the next couple months, like I said, we're going to be looking at a book called Ecclesiastes. And I know many of you like probably haven't read that. It's kind of an obscure book, and we'll talk a little bit about it. But in the book of Ecclesiastes, we're going to see that Solomon, the guy that wrote it, found out that life was like this. If he wasn't investing it in the right places, in the right areas, life was like an EpiPen trainer. Looked good on the outside, had all the right parts, but on the inside, it didn't have what was necessary to save you, to help you. And so here's the point for this week that I want you to get as we go. And today is sort of a setup for the next few weeks with this series. But I want you to understand that the pursuit of anything other than Jesus will always leave you empty. The pursuit of anything other than Jesus will always leave you empty. Going back to the EpiPen. This looks good, but it's empty. There's nothing in here that is of value that will save. And we spend so much time, so much energy, so much money, so much more time, so much more money, going after things and pursuing things that aren't Jesus and expecting them to save us. And I don't mean save us like salvation for eternity. We, for the most part, we understand that, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But you mean just, we expect, well, once I get that, that'll make things better. And so I wanna look at this book called Ecclesiastes with you. And I'm gonna read through it first. So if you have your Bible or your YouVersion app, go to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And we're gonna be working our way through this. Don't worry, we're not gonna cover every verse in this book. We'll be here for a couple of years. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and I'm going to read the first few verses, and then I'm going to come back to it and break it down a little bit, but I want to just read it through a little bit. And hopefully, even as we read this, you'll hear some of the words that were sung in Hurts No Good there. But this is what Ecclesiastes 1 says. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What does a man gain from all his labor and toil? What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? What's the answer? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place where the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which anyone can say, look, there's something new. It was here before. Already long ago. It was here before our time. Is there no remembrance of the former generations? And even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. He says everything is meaningless. Basically, here's the deal. And let me just talk a little bit about Solomon and why this matters and why we care about some guy a long time ago that wrote a book and told us that everything is meaningless. Thanks for the encouragement. Thanks, Carla. I actually posted this a couple days earlier, but we invited people to come today. Come to MC3. Today, we begin Life Stinks. So, and I read the undercurrent there. It's like, hey, come to MC3 where life stinks and you can start this week. But obviously it's kind of depressing. It's kind of a downer. And so this whole series, and you'll see there's a reason why we're calling it this. But I want you to understand as we set this up that Solomon was a guy that had every right and every reason to write what he did here in Ecclesiastes. See, I want you to understand some things about Solomon's standpoint and who he is. A little bit of background here. First of all, Solomon, let me back up. The book Ecclesiastes, here, you want to follow me here for this real quick? It is a English transliteration of the Greek translation of the Hebrew in which it was originally written. Aren't you glad to know that now? You can win that on Jeopardy. But basically the book Ecclesiastes is actually, the name comes from the word, the first verse says the words of the teacher. The teacher there in Greek means, it's from a word called ekklesia, the one who has been speaking to the called out assembly. And so they named the book Ecclesiastes based on that first word, the teacher. This person that is the throughout the book is going to be referring to himself and saying the teacher. These are the words of the teacher. This is what the teacher has learned. Almost like a teacher teaching his students. So I just threw that in there. Not that you need to know why Ecclesiastes is called that, but more just like, why does this even tie in? Where does the name come from? Basically, what happened is the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, and somewhere in the mid turn of the century, turn of the millennium, turn of the AD to BC thing, the Bible was translated into Greek. The Old Testament was translated into Greek, and the word ekklesia is the word they use for teacher there. So now you know that. That's good for you to know. But basically, this book is written by this teacher. It says in verse 1, the words of the teacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem. There's only one person this refers to, and I've already told you, and that's Solomon. Solomon was the son of David. He was the king of Jerusalem, and he was the wisest man that ever lived, aside from Jesus, who was God in the flesh. Solomon was here. Solomon lived many, 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 many years ago, and he was the son of David. David, you've heard of King David. He wrote, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. You know, Psalm 23, David wrote a lot of the Psalms. He wrote a lot of a lot of scripture. 1 and 2 Samuel is about his life, and you probably have heard about him and David and Bathsheba and that story. And if you've gone to church, maybe you heard about David dancing naked before the ark in celebration and worship. It's a great story to tell. You might know a lot of things about who David is. And his son, Solomon, was his son from Bathsheba, the lady that he had the affair with. Solomon was her son as well. So here you have this guy Solomon, and I want you to understand that there's three things about him and why he's able to write this book called Ecclesiastes, that we call Ecclesiastes. First of all, Solomon had it all. Solomon had it all. He had everything. He had everything from his perspective that we could look at and say, wow, if you're looking for someone that's got it all, Solomon was the man. Now, in the beginning of his life, David, his father, had just handed the kingdom off to him. And God came to Solomon and said, Solomon, look, I want to give you anything that you ask for. You know, and many of us are probably like, man, I wish God would do that for us. And I guess I could say that God has given us everything that we need, so it doesn't even matter what we ask for. Sorry, rabbit trail. But anyway, God came to him and said, look, Solomon, whatever you ask, almost, and I hate to make this equation, but almost like a genie. You know, hey, I will grant you one wish, Solomon, what is it? And Solomon, his response was basically, you know, my dad, David, was an amazing king. He did such a great job leading the people, and I'm nowhere near as good as him. I don't even know how I'm going to do this. I'm the king now. He said, God, just give me wisdom to know how to do the right thing. And God was impressed with his answer, and he said, okay, Solomon, you have asked for wisdom, and you will get it. There will be no one wiser than you. And he actually was so wise, he was able to write the book of Proverbs, which is full of sayings of wisdom. He was able to write Ecclesiastes for us. And so God gave him wisdom greater than anyone else. And then he said, Solomon, because you didn't ask me to, you know, defeat all of your enemies, you didn't ask me for lots of riches, or you didn't ask me for, you know, a really nice palace, he said, I'm going to give you all of that as a bonus. Because you were humble enough to ask me for something that is just so necessary for a leader, for wisdom. He says, I'm going to give you the rest of this stuff too. And so in 1 Kings chapter 10, and you're going to have a chance to look at this in your prime group this week, but it's on the screen here too. This is basically just a quick summary of Solomon's life. This is how awesome he was. It said that Solomon, King Solomon, was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. He was greater in riches and wisdom. So he not only had great wisdom, he not only knew how to do everything the right way, at least mentally, understanding it, he also had all the wisdom. And it said the whole world sought audience with Solomon to hear the wisdom that God had put in his heart. So the whole world, everybody, and there's a story about the Queen of Sheba that came to him, was so impressed. He's like, I've heard all these things about how wise you are and how wonderful your kingdom is, and I just had to see it. And everybody, he was the man, he was the one that everybody wanted to spend time with. You know, I don't know if you've ever, you know, looked at, I don't know who your idol is or who the person you look up to or something, you know, and maybe they're not someone that you have contact with, but I don't know. For me, I've always had one of those moments like, man, if I could just spend 10 minutes just sitting and talking with that person and finding out, you know, why, what makes you like you are. And forgive me for this shameless plug, but I've been really intrigued with the leadership of Tom Coughlin and how, as a coach, he's able to take year after year, he's able to take year after year teams that don't have much and turn them into contenders. And so I've been interested in that, and I just thought, you know, wow, if I had 10 minutes just to sit and chat with him and find out, like, well, how do you do that? Well, what do you do when people don't want to do what you say to do? And, you know, just all that stuff. And that's basically the way Solomon was. He was one of these guys where not just a few people, but it says all the kings of the world wanted to spend time with Solomon. They wanted to have an audience with him. They wanted to know, what is it that makes you tick? How do you do this? Why? You know, God has given you so much. How does it work? And he had it all. He had everything. If you wanted it, he had riches. It says greater. And you'll have a chance, maybe if you want to, you can look in that passage in 1 Kings. And it just lists the things upon things and upon stuff that he had. And all the riches and all the wisdom he had. Everybody was just so impressed with how he led. And so here you've got a guy writing a book, and he had it all. He had everything. So it wasn't like some guy like me. Oh man. Yeah. I would, you know, being a millionaire, a billionaire would be really rough. I'm glad I'm not a billionaire. Like, my perspective doesn't count as much because I haven't been there. You know, for me to say, I mean, I'll give you an example, guys, ladies, you'll like this. Yeah, childcare is pretty hard, or childbirth is pretty hard. Man, I almost passed out while having to breathe, you know, and the one time, it was like Thanksgiving, I didn't get to eat dinner, so I was tired and famished, you know, low blood sugar. And I'm sure all the ladies are like, yeah, that's exactly what it's like. You know, I haven't been there, so I can't tell you what it's like. Solomon, to be able to talk about stuff and to talk about all his extravagant wealth and all the things that he had, he is able to say, yeah, it's meaningless, because he has been there. He had it all. So that's the first thing I want you to understand, that he's not just talking, and as we go over these next few months, he's not a guy that doesn't know. He has been there. He had it all. The second thing is that Solomon still had it all. Solomon still had it all when he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. He wasn't here like, yeah, I had it all, and then I gambled it away and lost everything. And, you know, and then he's like, yeah, see, it was all meaningless, and my life fell apart because of that. You know, that's not his story. We've all heard the story, and you know, when we don't win the lottery, we're quick to point out this. And I could almost say 99% of the time, if lottery comes up and you talk about, oh, I didn't win the lottery or something like that, and not that I play the lottery, but usually it's like, well, you know, those people that have won, they've lost everything. They had all this money, and we all know those stories of people that had it all and lost it, and they probably would say, yeah, I wish I never had won the lottery and how miserable things were. But you need to understand that when Solomon is writing Ecclesiastes, he's not writing as a guy that lost it all. And this is really, really important to this book, because we'll miss that his satisfaction. Again, we're going to miss that his satisfaction was not found in his things. And it wasn't found in his loss of things either. His lack of satisfaction, his dissatisfaction, his emptiness, his meaninglessness was found in the fact that he didn't have a relationship with God the way it should be. And so you need to understand that when this guy is writing this book, he is not writing as a guy that lost it all too. He's writing as a guy that, you know what? I have it all. It's all right here. I've got it all. And he sits down and writes and says, you know what? I've got it all and it's meaningless. It's empty. It's vanity. It says that, then the third thing I want you to understand is that with all this, and I just kind of alluded to it, is that Solomon had it all. Solomon still had it all when he wrote this. Yet Solomon was empty. The word there, the Hebrew word in verse 2 for meaningless is hebel. Go ahead and say hebel. It's fun to say. Just don't spit on people in front of you. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Hebel. Good. Hebel. Meaningless. Vanity. Empty. Futile. Not futile. That means jousting and knights. This is futile. Futile. It's worthless. It's empty. And the word hebel, it's so interesting because in just verse 2, he says it, and you don't see this, but he says it 5 times. He says, hebel, hebel, says the teacher. And then the phrase, and depending on your translation, it might say utterly meaningless or you know, futility of futilities. Basically, there's a way that they would, to make something even more, they would repeat it twice. So he says, it's not only meaningless, it's meaningless, meaningless. It's utterly meaningless. It's hebel, hebel. And then he says, everything is hebel. He says, it is awful. It is meaningless. It is futile. I have all this stuff. I have all the wisdom of the world. I am the man. I am the wisest guy on the planet. Everybody is coming to me. And yet he writes, it is all empty. It is all meaningless. And not just, yeah, it was kind of meaningless. He says it's meaningless. It's meaningless. It's utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Everything is futile. Everything is empty. Everything is vanity. It is not worth anything. When I was growing up, and I've shared this with you before, I used to go to Florida, spend my summers with my grandparents in Florida, and they lived a block from the beach. And one of the things my brothers and I used to do is make sandcastles. And actually, we didn't make sandcastles. We usually made water parks. I don't know why. But like we had water slides and stuff and ladders and stairs up to them and trees in the background, all this stuff. And we always wanted to make a water park closer to the edge of to the ocean. You know, we could be way back on the beach, but it wasn't as fun because you didn't have the wet sand. You had to run back and forth with the bucket. So we usually made it near the edge so that we would have wet sand there. And if you know anything about making stuff with sand, wet sand works a whole lot better than the dry stuff. And so we would make these water parks and have all these ornate things. And then, of course, and we'd spend our, like I said, we were there all the time. Like I would get up in the morning at 10 o'clock, or I didn't get up at 10. Well, I probably did. But but we would go to the beach around 10 or 11 and stay there till like 4 o'clock in the afternoon because it was there. That's what you did. And so, you know, in the course of the day, of the tide would start to come up. And so what we would do is we would build like these walls, you know, these fortress walls to keep the water from coming in. And again, if you've been to the beach or done anything like this, you know that as the water gets up, it's not just the water from the outside that tries to wash over. It's the water from underneath. It starts welling up underneath and caving in the sides. And we would work and work and work, and we'd have fun. Like, oh, no, more water, you know, and try to block it with our bodies and lay all down. And ultimately, we could work all we want, but the waves took over, and the water park was gone. And even if we were able to save it for that afternoon, the next day it's gone. It's washed away. And that's this idea. That's exactly what hebel means. That it's meaningless. You can spend all the time in the world on it, but it's not going to last. It's not going to matter. It's just going to be washed away. Even if you're able to hold on to it for a little bit, in the end, it's just empty. In the end, it's not going to help you. It's not going to save you. It's not going to get you through. So I just wanted to give you that. I mean, probably more than you ever want to know about Solomon, but that's sort of the background of this book, and he kind of sets this up. And you're going to see some phrases as you read through this. You're going to see meaningless over and over, or futile, or vanity over and over and over and over throughout this book. So you know, if you come back in a couple of weeks, you're like, wait, didn't he just talk about that? Kind of, yeah. And you're going to see that we're going to look at all these different topics as we go through. But let me just kind of tell you. So he looked at everything. He's the son of David, the greatest guy in the kingdom, the wisest man that ever lived. And he says it's all meaningless. And he goes on and says, you know, what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? You know what? He says, I work hard. And we're going to talk about this in a few weeks. Work stinks. That I work hard. And you know what? What do I gain? I die. Someone else gets what I work for. So that's what he went on. Then going on, I'm going to read from the screen because apparently my translation doesn't match up with what I put on there. So he goes on and says, then generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. He says, you know what? people come, people go, people die, they get old, they die. The earth is still here. The earth is like, yep, been there, done that, seen that. He goes on and says, the sun rises and the sun sets. Oh man, today the sun rises. And ooh, in a few hours, what a gorgeous sunset. And he says, you know what? It's going to happen again tomorrow. It's going to happen the next day. Happens over and over and over, returns to where it runs. He says, the wind blows to the south and turns to the north, round and round it goes. And if you know anything about wind, it never gets where it's going. He says, it just blows on and on. It keeps going. It's kind of pointless. He goes on and then says, streams, everything, they flow into the sea. The sea isn't overflowing. If you ever drive down to Harrisburg, you can watch where the Juniata joins the Susquehanna. If you go up north there, you can see where some of the other rivers join the Susquehanna. And the last time I checked, except for when we had that flood a few months ago, but it's not overflowing. You know, Harrisburg City Island isn't like, oh no, there's too much water. You know, they wish, actually, and that's a whole other story of the history of Harrisburg, but somebody decided, hey, let's make the capital right here by this fine river. And they never actually checked the depth, so that nobody could actually move a ship up to the, to Harrisburg from the Chesapeake. But that's a true story, so if you ever want to read about the history of why Harrisburg is where it is. But anyway, it doesn't get full. And then he goes on, he says, everything is wearisome, more than one can say. He says, it just wears you out. He says, your eye never has enough of seeing. There isn't a point where you're like, all right, that's good. Now, maybe some of you are like that, you know, that's good. But you know, for the most part, your eye isn't like, oh, sorry, you've reached your quota for the day. You can't go any further. Your eye doesn't do that. He says your ear doesn't, like, oh, la 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 la. You know, we saw that in the video. It was posted on Facebook, by the way, if you didn't get to pick up that ignition video, the compilation that they showed it all tuned up last week. But your ear doesn't say, oh, sorry, that's all I've got. I can't take anymore. There isn't a point where the sound bounces off. He goes on and says, what was done will be again. There is nothing, let me get that right. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. That's another phrase you're going to hear. There's nothing new under the sun. He's saying that, oh, I've got a great idea. I'm going to invent something so that people can communicate with each other through the air. Actually, I was talking to Kirk the other day, and he's in State College, and I'm in Lewistown. and there's something up with my phone. I was actually using a Bluetooth wireless headset to talk to my phone. And he's like, he says, oh man, where were you? It sounded weird there. It sounded like you were like 50 feet away. And then he's like, well, actually, you're like a few hundred or, you know, tens of miles away. And we're like, yeah, look at us complaining about like, oh, it sounds like you're 50 feet away when you're like in a whole other town. But anyway, that technology has been around. Yeah, iPhones are always going to be something new, and there's always going to be something new that way. But Alexander Graham Bell invented this thing. Actually, he didn't invent it. I don't want to get into all that either, but Tesla and all that junk. But anyway, the phone, yeah, before the phone, there were other ways of communicating, and, you know, you've probably watched movies where they'll raise flags, you know, old, like Braveheart or something like that, or they'll play a trumpet, or there'll be drum beats. All of those were ways of communicating people across distances. It's nothing new. That's what Solomon's saying. Yeah, oh, but I've got the iPhone 4S. Yeah, you know what? There'll be something. It's just like something else. That's what he's saying. There's nothing really new. Nobody's inventing anything brand new out there. And I know that's really depressing. Like, oh, I was an inventor. Well, you can apply online for that thing. You can mail it in and win stuff from TV or whatever. But anyway, he says, is there anything you can say? Yeah, look, this is something new. He said, it was here already. Long ago. It was here before our time. You know, and this is one of the things as I'm aging, you know, watching the things that I did in middle school become stylish again. I was just telling Kendra the other day, I'm like, man, what was it? I was like, that's coming back now. And if I had just kept it, which I probably did until like last month, you know, like, there's nothing. I'm waiting for when they start pegging their pants. You know, that, you know, the rolling thing. Remember when people used to do that? And I'm sure people that are beyond my age can look and say, oh yeah, we've seen 30 different versions of those things as they change throughout the years. But that's his point. There's nothing new. It's all meaningless. It's all empty. There's nothing to any of this stuff. And he goes on and says something else. What does he say? He says, no one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow it. You know, and again, this is kind of depressing, but his point is that you can spend all of your time and energy and effort in things, pursuing things, but ultimately, the pursuit of anything other, oh, that's on the screen. The pursuit of anything other than Jesus will always leave you empty. That's his whole point in this whole book. that if you're not pursuing God, if you're not pursuing your relationship with Him, if you're not pursuing that, you're going to find out that it's empty, that it's not going to help you, it's not going to save. It's just a useless EpiPen. So I want to talk to you real quick here. Not really quick. Yeah, I never do that. I want to talk to you for a long time over the next few minutes about some things and how this works in our lives. And I think, you know, it's great for us to say, yeah, okay, the pursuit of anything other than Jesus doesn't satisfy. And I would suspect, and even as I'm preparing and working through all this, I suspect we're like, yeah, you know what? I mean, I'm not like a Satanist, so I guess I'm okay, right? But I think there's a lot of things that we do and we put our hope in, we put our source of joy, our sense of salvation in things that are just empty and meaningless. And so I want to talk about two kinds of things. First of all, I want to talk about the bad things. You know, I'm a preacher, I'm a pastor, I have to talk about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So we already covered the rock and roll this morning. So let's talk about sex. Bad things don't satisfy. Sin will never satisfy. The thing about sin is that it is appealing to your eye. We can go back to the Garden of Eden and see that Eve saw the fruit. It looked good. It was pleasing to the eye. And so she took it and ate. And her husband, who was there with her, did it as well. Sin looks good. Sin always looks good. But sin doesn't satisfy. Bad things don't satisfy. And again, I'm just going to lay out tons of things over these next few minutes. And you can just kind of see where you are. What is it that what things are you pursuing that are not going to satisfy? And like I said, the first thing there, sex. Let's talk about sex. Sex is not going to satisfy you. The pornography industry is built around that concept. The reason that pornography brings in more money than pretty much any other industry in the world is because they know that you're not, they know that you're not going to be satisfied. You're going to want more. You're going to want more, and so you'll keep spending money. This concept, like, that one time is not going to be it. When it comes to relationships and sexual relationships with other people, like, oh, well, if I can get with her, then I would be good. No, you won't. You're not going to be satisfied. Sex will not satisfy. God created it. It's His idea. So I'm allowed to talk about it in church. It's His idea. And He says, here's how I want you to use it. And it's going to be awesome. But if you try to pursue sex as the end, you're not going to be satisfied. You're always going to want more. It's never going to be good enough. And I'll tell you what, man, I mean, there's just so much that is built around this concept. I mean, TV, all of that stuff, all of it just says, oh, it's going to be good. Every sitcom is about that. And they never cover the fact that, no, it's not good. I mean, do I like sex? Yeah. God made it that way. We have four kids. I know how to do it. Okay? But if my pursuit, even as a married man, if my pursuit is sex, it's not going to satisfy me. And I mean sex within my marriage, with my wife. Sorry, you're usually not in here. but if that's my end, if that's my goal, then it's not going to satisfy me. How about the next thing? Again, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Drugs and alcohol. It's the same thing. Like if we think this idea like, okay, man, next time, well, what if I just a little hit here? That'll get me good, and it'll satisfy me. And I mean, that's the whole nature. Hey, do you want to try some? It'll make you feel good. And the high isn't going to get you there. And you, if you know anything about the consequences, the way this stuff works on your body, on your biology, most people that are addicted to drugs need to use drugs not to get high, but to get normal, because it doesn't satisfy them even to get high. And the same thing with alcohol, and I'm not saying you should never drink. I'm saying the Bible is very clear about drunkenness. But if our goal is, oh, man, I can't wait to get home and throw down a few, and that'll make me feel better, you've missed it. If that is your source of satisfaction, then you are not going to be satisfied. We're reading through a book with the elders called Church Planter, and in it, this guy has a quote. He says, you know you're in trouble when your accountability group is Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, and Jose Cuervo. And for a lot of us, that's the way it is. It's like, you know, not a lot of us, but maybe for you, and it's not that way for me, okay? So that's one thing maybe I kind of have a grip on, maybe. But my point is that if that's what you're doing, like, that's going to solve my problems, that's going to make life better, you're not going to be satisfied, because only Jesus is going to satisfy you that way. How about rebellion? Talked about this a little before the beginning. Rebellion. Some of you are trying to find your source of satisfaction in just being a rebel and just being different. And maybe it was because your parents did something, and probably just one or two little things maybe, that just ticked you off. And so your response is, I'm going to be this way the rest of my life. And so no matter what the situation is, you are not going to conform. Now, I do recognize that a few weeks ago I smashed a mirror saying that we are not supposed to conform to the world. And what I'm talking about here is different. I'm talking about this idea that says, well, no matter what anybody says, I'm going to do the opposite, because I want to stand out. And you find your identity in your rebellion. And it's easy to talk about this if we had a bunch of high school kids in here. And be like, oh yeah, you're rebelling against your parents. But adults, we do it too. We try to look different and to stand out. No, I don't like that. I think that's dumb. And whatever it is, and we try to find our source of satisfaction in our rebellion and our ability to be different. Oh, you know what? Isn't that a beautiful sunrise? No, I think it sucks. Why did you say that? Just because I'm a rebel. Like, what? And I don't say this. You can talk. If you don't like the sunrise, I don't care, okay? But do you understand what I'm getting at? Like, if that is where you're going, you say, I am pursuing, that is who I'm going to be. I'm going to be the rebel. And I don't know where that looks for you. You know what's going on in your heart. Because I frankly, on the other side, I think way too many church people, myself included, blend in way more than we should. So somewhere there's a balance in all this, but you understand. Next thing, another sin issue, some issue of not following God, is materialism. Materialism is finding our satisfaction in our stuff. And if you think that your stuff is going to satisfy you, you're going to be let down. If you think, oh, if I just get that new house, your house will burn down. It's going to happen. Or it will be bulldozed. Or they'll find out that there were Indian arrowheads buried on your property. And so the federal government will come in and take it away. I don't know. But if our satisfaction is found in our stuff, we're going to miss out. It's wrong. And it can't be in the iPhone 4S. It can't. And I know I hit on this stuff a lot. But we're in America. We have so much stuff. We have so much stuff. Right now, there's a group of people in that just left this past Friday to go to Haiti. The guy that works with Justin in his office, his business partner, is down there leading a team of people. And they're serving with people and that have nothing. And you go and spend some time in another country. You spend some time with people that don't have anything, and you realize how much you have. And we don't need all the stuff that we have. We don't need it. I wish I could somehow communicate that, because this, I think, is one sin issue that the church in America struggles with. We find our satisfaction, we find our sense of being in all the stuff that we have. We do. And then the last thing, bad thing, I'll call it here, and some of these I'm going to flip on you later and you'll be like, what? But religion. This is the classic, oh, well, if I do good, I'll get to heaven. If I'm a religious person, I'm not even talking about going to church. I'm just saying, you know, like, whatever you find to do that is a spiritual thing, like maybe Oprah is your religion. Religion is not going to satisfy you. Doing good, it's not going to satisfy anyone else. Oh, wow, that guy's a devout Buddhist. It's not going to satisfy, because it's not Jesus. Religion will not satisfy. If it's not Jesus, it's not going to satisfy. And so you've got this guy Solomon. He's done a lot of these things, and he did not have a very good ending to his life. And frankly, let's go back to the sex one just while I'm talking about this topic here. He had 300 wives and 700 concubines. And all a concubine is a sex slave. So there are about 1,000 ladies in his life. Okay, that's, just do the math here, okay? That's pretty much one different person a day for 3 years. Now, he may have been wise, but he still got old, and I don't think he could handle it that way. So you're talking about, you know, even spread out further. And this guy said it was meaningless, and we're going to talk about some of that later. But Anyway, so the bad things won't satisfy. We get caught up in sin. We get caught up in these things. We know they're wrong. And the thing is, and that's the problem with sin, is that it looks good on the front. You look at the apple, it's shiny, it's tasty, it's pleasing to the eye, and the back is rotten. But you never see the back. So that's just one thing that won't satisfy. And here's the other thing that I want to talk about, is that good things don't satisfy. And this is where I want to maybe adjust our mindset a little bit. Because I think a lot of times we invest our time, we spend our time, we focus, we pursue things that are good things. But unfortunately, as soon as we start pursuing them for the source of our satisfaction, actually they become an idol, is what the Bible calls it. They become something that we are pursuing in place of God to try to satisfy ourselves. So the first thing, these are in no particular order whatsoever, but some good things. Relationships. Relationships are good things. We have prime groups. We call them C1, community, because we want people to be in community and relationship with each other. But if your end game, if your goal is I want to be in a relationship with someone and think that that is going to satisfy you, it won't. I mean, yeah, and some of you are high school age, but I've worked with students for 18, 20 years. And watch them like, oh, this guy, I'm finally dating Chad. And like, oh, how are things with Chad? It's wonderful. He's the best. And be like, next week, like, what's wrong with you? Broke up with Chad. He's a jerk. But I'm going to date Brian. And Brian is wonderful. And everything about him is perfect. You know, and you watch this happen over. I'm like, and we've had these hard conversations with some of the girls, and I don't know, guys, I guess this way sometimes too, but we're like, you know what? You're never going to find your satisfaction in the right person. You've got to find it in Jesus. You're not going to find it there. Maybe we have this opinion of enough friends. Well, if I have more friends around me, then, you know, wow, he's popular. Look at all the friends that he has. Look at all the people. Look at all the cars parked in front of his house all the time. You know, wow, that's really cool. If that is your goal, you're not going to be satisfied. There's never going to be enough. You know, and let's go even really shallow. Facebook. If I have enough friends on Facebook. Oh, if I have enough people following me on Twitter, then we're going to be good. And let me tell you right now, I fell into this trap. I'm in this trap because we have 98 people that like Mifflin County Community Church on Facebook. 98 is 2 people away from 100. And you know what that means? That in 2 more people, I'll be wondering when we're going to get 200 people liking us. And once we get 200, then it'll be, when are we going to hit 500? When are we going to hit 1,000? And if my sense of like, wow, we're succeeding as a church because 98 people went click, like, I've messed up. You guys need to go now. I know that's supposed to happen. I look bright? Okay. So if relationships, and maybe some of you have been in multiple marriages, and it's the same problem here. And I'm not saying I know the situation with your marriages or that there aren't 2 people to the story, but I've watched it in people that I know in some of my own family relationships that this husband wasn't good enough. But I'm going to dump this guy. I'm going to divorce him. And now this guy, he's going to be the one. And, you know, 5 marriages later, we're still wondering, well, why isn't, I thought that was the one. No, the reason is because the one is Jesus. And not that relationship. So maybe that's where you are. You're trying to fill an emptiness with people. The next thing is a job or a career. Like, oh man, my job is awful. I feel this way all the time. If only I had that job. Once I get that job, or maybe once I get a job, then everything will be good. And we place our hope and we pursue something that is not going to satisfy us like Jesus will. And there's that promotion. Well, listen, honey, I know I have been really busy lately, but once I get this promotion, then things will be easy. And it doesn't get that way. It doesn't get easier. I mean, I'll talk to you. I was easily a youth pastor for 10 years, and it was easy. I had plenty of time. I didn't have to be the one on call. I didn't have to be the one to always worry about stuff. And, you know, some people cautioned me, like, well, you realize that once you get to be the boss, it's not going to make it easier. That's not why I got into this. I want you to understand that. And it didn't get any easier, I'll tell you that. But that's the idea, is that, you know, if we're pursuing, well, once we get that job or that promotion, if that is where our hope is found, we are going to be to be dissatisfied. It's not going to work out. It's not going to get us. Next thing, politics. Maybe politics is the thing that you're putting your energy and time and effort into. And think, okay, once that person gets elected, then that's going to solve everything. You know, oh, well, if I can promote my, whether it's left-wing or right-wing values, or maybe it's moderate values today, I don't know. Once you can promote that, that's going to solve everything. And, you know, one of the things that always just is my personal take on this, like, you cannot vote people to make the country a believer. You can't vote people into power and say, okay, once we get that person, then the country's going to turn back to God like the way they were founded. It won't happen. You can't do that. It's not going to work. And so I think, unfortunately, we put our effort and say, like, oh, well, once this candidate gets there, that's going to solve everything. And you are putting your hope in something that is not going to satisfy. Jesus is the only answer for our country. Jesus is the only answer for any country. And I don't care if your money says in God we trust or in Allah we trust. Jesus is the answer to all of that. And we can't say, well, oh, if we just get enough people to vote for this measure in the House, that'll solve it. It's not going to do it. It's not going to satisfy. You can't do it. Next thing is money. Maybe money. Money is not a bad thing. We need money. You need it. Otherwise, you're stealing, okay? In America, it's either stealing or money. Money is something that we need. But if we are pursuing money, and Scripture talks about the love of money, if that is our goal, then we are not going to be satisfied. And again, I mean, a lot of these tie together. You get more money, you can get that next thing. And then once you get that thing, that'll fix everything. Once you get that bigger car to carry all the kids around, and then you get stuck with the bigger payment, and then you get stuck with the bigger problems. Money is not going to satisfy us in itself. And I will say this. I know that there's this attitude, just as people, that is, well, once I have enough, then I'll be able to give more. Then I'll be able to help more people out. And that is a lie from Satan. And I say that to you not as a person that is full of money, or that a person that says, hey, I want your money because I'm a pastor and this is a church. I'm saying that as a person that has succumbed to that. And just last week, I was sharing with you all about our core values, and I got to the one that said outrageous generosity, and I thought, that's not us. Because my background has been, oh, once we get enough, then we'll be able to give more. And so tomorrow we have an elders meeting, and guys, I'll just prep you on this now. I'm going to talk with them and say, look, I don't care if we don't have much in the bank. We need to start giving to other people. Scripture is all about, I'm not Joel Osteen here or any of the celebrity guys that say, hey, if you give this, God will give you this. I'm not saying that. But I will say that Scripture is very clear that the more we give, the more God is going to give back to us. And some of you are waiting until you have enough before you start giving. And you need to stop. You need to give now. And maybe it's to the church. Maybe it's to some family member. Maybe it's the next door person. You're like, wow, they're really struggling. Help them. We cannot wait until we have enough, because you're never going to have enough. You need to give now. And I'm working on that as a church. We're going to be more generous. And I know there's Michelle in here freaking out about the books right now. Like, oh, how's that going to work? Not that she's not faithful. I don't mean to imply that, but she's the one that has to record all the numbers that I just throw out there. So money is not going to satisfy. Family. Last week, I talked about, I didn't really, Reggie Joyner talked about the importance of fighting for your family and how your family needs to be your priority and needs to be important. And so I'm going to say to you today that is true. But if we are pursuing family instead of Jesus, then you're placing your faith, your hope, in something that is not going to save you. And I have watched the family excuse get used over the years. It's awesome. Because you throw out the family card, and nobody can be like, oh, well, it's your family. Oh, I can't help out. I know there's a service project, but I can't help because I really have to spend some time with my family. Oh, man, I understand. It's probably been like a hard week and a hard month. Yeah, it's really hard. And I'm going to spend time with my family. What are you doing? Are you going to, like, go, you know, play a game at the park together or something? Well, they're going to go clean the room, and I'm going to go watch that football game that I really wanted to watch. But we're together in the house, you know. And so sometimes we just pursue, like, oh, I can't wait to get together with my family. And family is important, and I hope you don't miss what I'm saying. But if family is the end game, If we're thinking, oh, well, now that I'm with my family, things will be better. It's not going to satisfy you. It's a good thing, but it's not going to satisfy you like Jesus can. Don't let family get in the way. Next thing is social justice. This is a popular thing today. We want to care about the needs of the world. You know, I don't know if you saw my brown shoes. I wear Tom's shoes. And when I buy Tom's shoes, one, I get a pair of shoes, and then they donate a pair of shoes to a child in Africa that doesn't have any shoes. And that's really cool. But if all of my life is built around Tom's shoes or my Abort 73 t-shirts or caring for the unborn, and that is my hope, it is wrong. Is pro-life important? I think that is one of the political issues, if you want to tie this into politics, that is dead on biblically. And you can fight me later about it, but Scripture, I think, is very clear about from the conception, God has created us. God has designed us. But if I spend all of my effort and all of my energy and all of my focus into being, man, I'm pro-life. Let's get the vote. Let's protest this. Let's go and blow up that abortion clinic. Let's go. You know, if that is my end, then it is not going to satisfy me like Jesus. And so that's one of the things. Maybe that's where you are. Maybe you're pursuing this, like, oh, I'm doing this really good thing. And that has become your whole focus. If that is your whole focus and it's not Jesus, you're not going to be satisfied. You're going to come out saying it's empty. It's meaningless. It's meaningless. There's nothing to it. How about health? Our bodies are a temple of the Holy Spirit, right? We need to be eating right. We need to be exercising. And those are all true. But if your thought is, once I get to that weight, then I'll be satisfied. You won't. Once I get that size chest, then it'll be good. Once I can bench press that much, then I'll be okay. No, you are placing your hope and your satisfaction in yourself. And if you're anything like me, I'm not a very good person to invest in. You're wasting your energy and you're saying, you know what? That thing is not going to satisfy. If your sense of satisfaction comes from you, it's not going to work. It's going to leave you empty. And you might be a Biggest Loser candidate and have gotten all the way down and say, look what I've lost and look how incredible I am. And you know, you can be on one of those commercials where they have that product that instantly makes you look like this. And if that's the end, then you've wasted it. There's so much more than just looking that good. And you're going to get to the end and you know what's going to happen? And let me tell you this. And I'm getting there, and some of you, I can make fun of you right now, but we get older. And things that were firm and tight sag a little bit more. And things that were growing full and thick in middle school fall out. And it's just going to happen. And, you know, all that, and again, I'm not saying like, eat, drink, and then you die. You know, I'm not saying that. But understand, if that is what you're pursuing, if that is where your source of satisfaction, if it is anything other than Jesus, it's going to leave you empty. All right, moving on. Church. Church, this is a great one because we're a church plant. We are a group of people that have come together and we're kind of, it's new, it's fresh, it's different. And if you think that, oh, well, I got an MC3, man, now I'm good. You've messed up. This is not where you want to place your hope and your trust. And yeah, this church, they've got so many great things happening. And they got that cool garage. It's actually warm sometimes. And if that is the source of your hope, it's going to let you down. If I'm the source of your hope, well, I want to go to that church because Sean's the pastor there. And I've heard that. And I don't say that because like, oh, look how great I am. But like, man, seriously? This? Jesus is going to satisfy you way better than this will. And you need to remember that maybe it's church or going to the right church. And we throw this around, you know, in a way. And let's take it a little bit step further. What about worship? A lot of times we want worship to satisfy us because we think, oh, if I get really emotional, if the music is done the right way and if the lights are good enough and, oh, yeah, if I feel good, when I'm done, then I know that's what I needed. And whatever God is doing in you, if you're having a good day or a bad day, whatever that looks like in worship, if that is your goal, you're not going to be satisfied. Do you get it? I mean, a broken record? Yes. But a lot of times, especially, you know, Christians, Christ followers, we get caught up in the worship. Oh, that worship there was so good. Why? Oh, because it really spoke to me where I was. And that's awesome. That's called this Holy Spirit working. But you can't get caught up on a high like, oh, I hope next week is that way, because if it's not, then I'm not going to be satisfied. And suddenly, and this is a crazy thing, but you have made worship an idol. Because you have taken that good feeling and turned it into something that is trying to satisfy you other than Jesus. And that's not going to work. And then the last thing, again, looking at church stuff, is ministry. A lot of times we think, well, if I can just do more for God, then I'll feel better about myself. Then I'll be satisfied. Then life will come together the way I want it to. And some of you, you know, looking at some of these other issues, some of you are sacrificing family for the sake of ministry and think that God's going to be pleased with either of those things, and he's not. God wants you to be sold out to him, to Jesus, not to how much you show up at church, not to how many good things you do. Again, are they important? Yes. But if that is your goal, if that is like, oh, well, I've done this, this, and this, and I'm serving on 72 committees at our church here, which we don't have that many, but... But you understand if that's like, oh, well, I'm doing that, so now I'm good, then you're going to be disappointed. It's not going to satisfy. And even though the story of Mary and Martha, Jesus doesn't want what you do as much as he wants who you are. He wants your heart. He wants your relationship. In the story of Mary and Martha, Jesus was coming to visit. And Mary, when Jesus got there, she just spent some time sitting at the feet of Jesus. Just learning from him, just spending time with him. And Martha's going around doing stuff, vacuuming under the chairs, you know, cleaning up the counters in the kitchen, making sure that all the chairs are facing the right way and the carpet is at a 45 perpendicular angle to the wall. I don't know what her deal is. But going around doing all that, and Martha's like, Jesus, Mary's a sin, and I'm doing all the work. And Jesus says, she's chosen the better thing because she's focusing on me. And that's where some of you are. Maybe, and man, I'm not saying I don't want people to help in our church. We need help. We need all of you to help. But if that's what you're thinking is gonna save you, it's just an empty EpiPen trainer. If you think that that is going to satisfy you, you're going to go and think, oh, I'm good, and suddenly realize that there is no medicine in it, and you are not going to be saved by it. So those are some things that we need to be aware of. And the point, and there's more. I think I have et cetera on there. Yeah, et cetera. I don't know what your issue is. And maybe it's one of these things. Maybe there's something else. But if we are putting, I'll just say it. If the pursuit of anything other than Jesus will always leave you empty. The pursuit of anything other than Jesus will always leave you empty. That's where Solomon came from. He had it all. He still had it all. And he wrote and said, you know what? I've got all this stuff and it's meaningless. It is empty. It is futile. It is not satisfying me. And the reason is, and we'll get to this at the end of the series and kind of break it down each week, but the reason is he realized that, you know what, it all comes down to following God. That's where true satisfaction is found. That's where true pleasure is found. That is where true joy is found. It's found in him and not in any of these other things. It comes down to that. So while the band comes up, they're going to actually close us out this week with a song. And I want to just talk to you a little bit about, you know, this series. It's called Life Stinks, and there's a reason we call it Life Stinks, because when it comes down to it, all these other things that Solomon is pursuing, that he had, all these things that he went after, did not satisfy him. And each week, we're going to look at some different things. We're going to look at, like I said, work. We're going to look at success. We're going to look at money. We're going to look at death. We're going to look at, what are some of the other things we're looking at? Anybody remember? Wisdom. We're going to look at wisdom. Yeah, we're going to look at all these different things. And a lot of them are good things. But when it comes down to it, Solomon realized that apart from God, life stinks. And that's where it is. And we wonder, we think, why, you know, why was this such a horrible week? Why did things go so bad? And I'm not saying that Jesus makes you all smell good and life is happy. And actually, you'll have a chance this week to discuss that in your prime groups. But oftentimes we wonder, like, why aren't things going well? And the answer really comes down to you're trying to fill your need with something other than Jesus. And if you're sitting here, please listen to me. If you're sitting here as a Christ follower, as a believer, thinking like, yeah, them heathens better learn to follow Jesus and not their junk. I'm talking to you too, because we all do it. We get caught up in all these things, and again, It's the empty EpiPen. It all looks good on the outside. It looks like it's got everything you need, and you think, this is going to save me. And let me tell you now, before you get to the point where you need it, before you get to that point, realize now that it's not going to save you. Because if we had this EpiPen trainer in the box, looking all good like it did, thinking that it's going to save us, and if Jack had an anaphylactic reaction and started to asphyxiate, started to suffocate, and we took this and jabbed it into his leg, my son would die. Because inside it's empty. Don't wait till that point. So what we're going to do is they're going to play a song here, sing a song called Breathe. And the chorus is, I am desperate for you. I'm lost without you. And while they sing, some of you just need to confess some stuff to God. Some of you need to, you know, maybe something I mentioned, maybe something else that God's reminding you of in the back of your mind. But you need to get some things right because you're pursuing things other than Jesus. And maybe it's been a lot of things. Maybe it's been one or two things that you're like, yeah, that thing has been what's been hanging me up. And so I want you to use this song as they sing, and you're welcome to sing along with them, certainly in worship. But use this as a time to confess, to go to God. I don't want you to confess to me. I want you to say, God, where is it that you have been caught up in stuff that is not going to satisfy, that's just empty and meaningless? And take the time now and come to your Father who loves you with open arms and says, I know. He's not surprised. He's not going to be like, oh, didn't see that. No, he knows. And he's been waiting for you to say, look, I'm finding my hope, my strength, my purpose in Jesus. Because that is where you're going to be satisfied. And I will say this too, that when you do this now, you're going to need to do it tonight, tomorrow morning, three times the next day, seven times the day after that, two times. Like, this isn't like, okay, we solved it. It's a constant battle where we need to say, okay, am I pursuing something other than Jesus? So use this opportunity to worship, but also just to get before God. If you need to kneel on the cold floor, then kneel on the cold floor, because I would rather that happen and you get things right with him than just going through the motions and looking good on the outside and finding out too late that these empty things won't satisfy.